The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. All right, y'all, welcome back to the Fearless Podcast. This is episode 67, and I got a special guest in the studio.
Hello.
Hi, dear. How are you?
Doing great.
So we got a lot of stuff going on, and our life continues to grow and expand and change, and we are busy. And then we have family emergencies that people break bones and different things, and it kind of changes your schedule and all that stuff. So that's what we have going on. And the older boys that started the channel, they're continuing to expand and grow and do their different businesses. And so they're incredibly busy.
Yes.
We're all incredibly busy, and we're trying to continue doing all of the things. And you're going to have to move your microphone closer.
I don't think I can.
You can.
There you go. Thank you.
And just maybe scoot that way a little bit. Just
you're going to have to push me that way.
Okay.
Because I can't move on this carpet. There.
So hopefully that's good.
Okay.
I should have fixed that before we started. But so all that being said, you know, everything's going to continue to change. I always hate using the word evolve, but it's going to evolve, and we're rolling with the punches. And you know, we've been on hiatus for about a week or so because we had a family emergency, and all is well and everything's great now. But you know, when you're function stacking and doing 40 different things, you know, when a major traumatic event happens, it kind of messes everybody up, and it messes up the schedule. Mm-hmm. And we're not really these big, like, highly defined calendar schedule people anyway. So it really messes up our schedule when stuff like this happens. But today, you know, I'm just thinking about the podcast and the trajectory and all these different things and how it's going to continue to change. It was much like our YouTube channel. You know, my philosophy and approach to it is we'll do different stuff and things that we're interested in, and watch and listen to the stuff that you like, and don't watch and don't listen to the stuff that you don't like. And of course, the social planners and the social media and the Al Gore and all of his rhythms and all that stuff supposedly doesn't like that, because one reason it doesn't like it is because it's like real life, and that's the way that normal people and the brain works. Mm-hmm. And to be forced into some kind of niche is, one, annoying. Two, it's controlling, and it's social planning. And I always felt like trying to like serve the algorithm was literally like a psychological operation, and I just refused to participate in it. And so, you know, people have become programmed to just accept the niche thing and be like, oh, well, this channel or this social media, they do this niche thing, and so do your niche thing, and then you'll get all the views and all the likes and all the accolades and all the dollars and all the revenues. And that's just not us. We've always been observe the masses and do the opposite. We've always been different. And so we're going to stay the course and observe the masses and do the opposite. And it will hinder us in the technocratic social media world, and it will greatly benefit us in the real world, which is most important. And we are still here. We want to encourage you, and we do want to still encourage people and do all the things. But I'm just trying to just trying to bring you a little bit inside the philosophy of our approach and what we're doing. And, you know, you can't do all the things, you know, you have to select, you have to pick and choose, and you have to do what you can do to your best, and what you can't, you got to let go. And so that's what we're doing. And in light of all that, we've had a lot of stuff going on, and, you know, I got involved with an investing group of guys that work with commercial real estate and all those things. And on this application form, you know, ask some questions about, you know, like, what are your goals? What are you looking to do? What can you bring to the group and all these different things? And in addition to that, we've been having conversations with new friends of ours, you know, about life. And it got me thinking about, you know, we've desired to build a living legacy and actively participate in that with our children. And that involves obviously our faith, and it obviously involves our finances and our future and, you know, future of our children. And what does that look like in a kind of family integrated environment? And, you know, and then how do you do all that? And so that's what my thought was, a first generation legacy, in the fact that, like, you have to actively write that. It's not like you can get a book. Like, for example, I had one of my coworkers, we were talking about courting, you know, and there's, I guess, all these different books on it. I haven't read any of them. I love books. I love learning from other people. I think books are great things that are essential. But when it comes to some things, I'm not interested in reading a book on that. You know, I'm not interested in reading a book on courting. A lot of it, there's a lot of logical approach to it. And I think it's as simple as that. I think it's very simple, but when parents are involved and when mature children are involved and you're like, well, what does that look like? How does this work? Especially when it's your first time doing something like that. And that is really what got me thinking about this. It's just like, okay, how many books are there on like a living inheritance and a living legacy and how to structure that? And what does it look like? And how do you get your children to buy in and all these different things? And I think so many people are looking for a checklist or looking for a book. And I would much rather design it myself and tweak it, you know, because God gave us brains and God gave us the Holy Spirit and God gives wisdom. And I don't think it's got to be complicated. And I don't think it has to be cookie cutter either. It doesn't have to be, well, this guy says this and that guy says that. And in a larger way, like, I don't agree with a lot of people on most things. So their systematic or their presuppositional approach, I'm probably going to disagree with. So you kind of got to blaze your own trail. And we know in the business world, you know, a pioneer is a guy that is dead in the trail with a bunch of arrows in his back, you know, so stand on the shoulders of giants and, you know, use other people's successes and failures as a starting point. But in our life and what we've been through, we are the first generation, like, living out our convictions the way that we're doing it. And I think that's kind of, in a way, how it should be done. You know, it's not like when it comes to like, oh, well, how did, you know, when your parents courted, how did that work? Oh, well, they didn't, you know? So there was, this used to be a normal social construct that was a relatively predominant thing. And now it's more extinct than the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And so what does it look like? So that just got me thinking about this, writing a living legacy in real time. And it is, one, it's an experiment, and it's a try, fail, adjust process. And you're being very quiet, so I'm wanting you to interject.
I didn't know. It felt like it was one continuous thought, so
well,
I didn't
want
to interrupt your train of thought.
No, it was definitely a run-on sentence.
Okay. There's so many different aspects to all of that. And I think that also when you're talking about, when you're talking about creating a living legacy, as far as you're sharing your faith, discipling your children, that requires a lot of time and a lot of input, and discipleship is purposeful. And everybody has different personalities and approaches to things too. And like for me, I am more like book oriented. So I do rely more on books. I even if it's things that we don't agree with, I can take those things and then use them as a sounding board kind of to be like, okay, well, this is a really good topic here. And this is why we don't see it this way, or we would do it differently. And then also, just like you said, using our real life experiences. We do have our parents that we could say, okay, they did things this way and this worked, this didn't work. We did things this way in our young lives or young married lives or before we were married, and this worked, this didn't work. We obviously want our children to do better than us. We want them to excel us in all areas by the grace of God. And we want to set them up for success. And so that means, when we got married, we went and rented a little tiny efficiency apartment, and we paid everything that we had to make our monthly payment on that rent. And so we have that experience, and we said, we don't want our children to have to go in town or out in the country somewhere and pay everything that they're making every month towards rent. We want them to be able to start better than we started. So that's always been a goal. Ever since our children were babies born, we always said, we don't want them to have to restart and rent something and then have some big mortgage and be tied to that and the stress that comes with the financial responsibility of that. So that was always a goal, is to at least have enough land. It doesn't take much land. You can put several houses on a small piece of land, but just to be that multi-generational family farm where they can get started, even if it was a tiny house of some sort or kind or structure, or if it was something that they built.
Yeah. And this speaks to my whole point of writing your own legacy, because I can hear people's wheels turning right now as far as like, oh, buying enough land for your children to build on, lucky you and all these different things. When we set and structured our goals as this was a goal that we had many years ago, 10 years ago, and when that is your goal and it takes you 10 years, the land that the boys, that the family is going to be building on was technically just purchased last year. So it took us 10 years to accomplish part of that goal. It doesn't happen overnight. And it's our plan that's specific to us. How you do that is you're going to have to write that. Mm-hmm. And that's all part of there's not a book on how to do this. And, how do you get your children to buy in? And what if your children don't want to stay on the property? And these are all different things that probably aren't written in a book. And these are different variables and factors that we don't necessarily know the answer to now. Time will bear most of this out.
Sure.
But that's all part of this idea of living and writing a legacy in real time. It's going to look completely different for everybody. All families are different. All families have different convictions and different ways of life and have different things that are more or less important to them. And so that's all part of your story and your legacy that you're going to have to write. And then as you're writing it, you're going to like, wait a minute, I always thought that this was important, but now that we're fleshing this out, this really isn't that important. And you're going to change it and you're going to tweak it. And then there's going to be life and stuff that happens and tragedy and triumph and many things that many blessings that you never expected along the way. And you're like, well, wait a minute, this doesn't fit in my plan. I never foresaw this happening and I didn't know how this was going to work. And now that the Lord is providing, you know, we're going to have to adjust the plan. And so all of that to say, you know, everybody's plan is going to be different and look different. And don't be afraid of that. You know, don't be afraid of, you know, and then as different families come together and.
Is this going to be edited?
No.
Oh,
no.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, it's not going to be edited. Nugget is acting like a nut and y'all probably can't hear her, but she's just going crazy on the deerskin rug. She's a weirdo.
I wanted to take her out of here, but okay.
I know. I want to take her out of here too, but I will not be editing this.
Okay.
We're going to keep it real.
Let's keep going. Okay. We got a crazy dog under our
feet. I've been trying, you know, we've been wanting to make a couple videos and stuff happens.
Yeah. So there's lots of different options. Like when we're talking about, if that is your goal of just, letting your children start better than you, not having to go and rent and spend a lot of money on rent. There's so many different options to do that. If you don't have, you know, a couple acres of land or whatever, I mean, one option is, if it's an option to sell what you have and move somewhere cheaper where land is cheaper and get some land. That's
what we did.
That's probably your best option right there. It takes sacrifice. And we have friends that did that. They had a big house that they built themselves, a big custom house. It was beautiful. It was exactly the way that they wanted it. It was on 5 acres. They had a big custom swimming pool, huge house. But then they also had 5 children. And as the children got older and got married, their priorities changed as a family. And they decided that, you know what? We thought we really cared about this big house that was paid for, by the way, but we're going to go ahead and sell it, take all of the money, and we're going to buy as many acres as we can buy with that money. And we're going to build a little house that's the size of our garage now. And we're going to live in that so that our adult children and the ones as they are becoming adults can have options to build on the land. And that's what they did. And some of them stayed in camper trailers when they were maybe first married. And I think the parents lived in a camper trailer the first year that they built their house. But they downsized to upsize their land. But there's also people that, you know, maybe you're already living pretty minimal. You have just a small house and you have the land that you want, or maybe moving's not an option to cheaper land somewhere else in the country or whatever. So maybe your option is you buy a rental property for your child, you know, maybe a duplex or maybe a trailer, you know.
And speaking of rentals right now, it's much cheaper to rent than to buy. So if you're considering making a change now, it's incredibly less expensive to rent. And it's, you know, don't get faked out by like the joys of home ownership. And we're all about owning and being debt free and all that stuff. But take advantage of the most optimal conditions, and the most optimal conditions right now are to rent. And even if you maybe had cash where everything is so overpriced, mm-hmm. it would be a great time to rent and stack your cash, and maybe house it in a whole life policy or something like right. that, something really cool, and fund your bank and all that cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And then take advantage of the real estate bubble that's coming within the next 12 months, a substantial correction. And, you know, that is an option.
Right.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's a good point too, is that, you know, if it is a matter of cashing in now on your property that you have, and then taking that money and putting it away until you find the right property, wherever that is, and, you know, just rent until you can, you know, there, it comes with sacrifice. We were just spending time with a family that we've known for 10 years, and they lived the first, I don't know, eight in a camper trailer with 10 children, and they made it work, and it wasn't fancy, and it wasn't glamorous, and it required all of their sacrifice that they had, but they gutted and redid this little farmhouse that was deplorable, in deplorable conditions. And I'm not over exaggerating that. And anybody else would have just bulldozed it down. But
yeah, and I could tell you that we couldn't have done what they did. If we had 10 kids living in that tiny camper, like, that never would have happened. I don't know how that plan would have morphed or changed.
Right.
But even if we tried to start out doing that, that right. wouldn't have happened.
Every family is totally different. Yeah. But, you know, if we had like a temporary housing type situation, if we had like a trailer or a mobile home on the property, that would have been better, I think. More comfortable, definitely, than the camper. But you know, that's just one tiny aspect, you know. And then when you get into, I think you were touching on courting and courtship, you know, I do rely too, like, on some people's experiences, and there's just different personalities. I mean, of people, I think that, like, I find security in reading, even if I disagree with 50% of the stuff. Like, I find security in reading some things. If it's written by people that are similar, like-minded, and have similar experiences, or are in the direction that we're going, I don't know. I find security in that, in taking from other people's experiences. I don't want to totally feel like I'm blazing a new path. I don't think it is a new path. Like, I think that's an old path.
It really feels like it's a very old path that's been well-traveled and maybe well-written, but in postmodern, post-truth America, it seems like a blazing trail with no wagon wheel marks, and the sod is overgrown, and there's lots of rocks. And
yeah, but I mean, like, the books that we're using, like the Man of Steel and Velvet, I mean, if there is any type of pre-marital books, or young married or old married books to read, that the Man of Steel and Velvet, I think, is a great, I mean, when you talk about communication, any aspect of marriage, finances, it hits on every single aspect of marriage. And then you have the complimentary books to that, which is the Fascinating Girl book, which is the pre-marriage woman's young lady's book, and then the Fascinating Womanhood book. And I know there's a lot of good books out there. I'm just saying those.
Yeah, older books. Like, there's no modern book.
Right.
And I think that's more what I meant. Like, there's no type of modern book written in the last 20 years, in my opinion.
Probably not.
That, I mean, in modern, that's a very broad term. Not that, you know, I guess I should say postmodern.
Right. Because, well, I mean, so much of, I think, even modern Christianity is probably going to be tainted with equality, or these ideals that, like, the woman's going to come in, the woman's going to come to this marriage with all of these. And how do you communicate in these, like, feminine ways between you and your husband?
It's diluted fourth wave feminism.
Right.
It's why, you know, Tim Walz is like this great vice, the psychological operation.
Right.
But yeah, it's just like effeminate, you know, like the way they extracted the word effeminate from postmodern Bibles, you know, is literally the fundamental point of the way that postmodern day Christianity has been deconstructed.
Right. And feminized. So, I mean, you'd have to be very selective, but if y'all have
castrated
any great materials or suggestions, that would be really great. There are some out there for sure. And our oldest son has read, I think one book he read a few months back was The Sacred Search. And that author has written many, many books in his lifetime. But my son said he got a lot out of that book. It was really a great book. And then, of course, the ones that I just mentioned, they're old, but they're just really, really practical in all aspects. I mean, it covers every aspect of marriage. And if you would heed some of that wisdom and glean from it, you would save yourself a world of hurt, you know, in your marriage. So, but then to a point,
I wasn't like trashing the books, but what I was saying, as far as like writing, like you're not going to find a book that says, you know,
right,
how to write and live your family's legacy.
Right.
Now, you know, you'll find different books on different components and different building blocks and what that looks like. And yeah, and I certainly wasn't like poo-pooing that or like putting that down. I mean, you know, books are great, you know, from learning from other people's experiences. But when it comes to reconstituting, a traditional, patriarchal, familial homestead, I mean, historically, this is the way that it was done.
It's just,
I mean, people, you didn't go to college to get a good education, to get a good job, to fly to LA to rent an apartment,
right,
3,000 miles from your family. Mm-hmm. You know, that was all part of the deconstruction process. Mm-hmm. And,
yeah, sure.
So there's no book on this, like as a package deal, like what does this look like? How do you do it? How do you start? What's the middle look like? What's the end look like? And then how do all the moving parts and interacting pieces work? And that's where the encouragement that I wanted to give is you just have to do it and you do have to start. You know, like we wanted family land, and we wanted to be able to actively develop that family land with our children as they grew. And now we're finally, you know, 10 years in the making. Now we're getting to this point where there is going to be building, starting, and this next phase for them. And how incredibly encouraging. And this, what's really fascinating is, we're living in this postmodern deconstructive world, and there's assassination attempts, and we have the most existential threats to society in this upcoming election that happens every 4 years, and all these different things. And if you turn on any kind of news or read any kind of thing, like the sky is falling and, you know, all the food is poisoned and the money supply is ruined and all these different things. But in reality, in IRL, if you're actively serving God, if you're actively worshiping God, if you're actively seeking his face and his direction, and he's lighting your path, and every step that you take, even though the world is going to hell in a handbasket and we're watching the manifestations of Antichrist and many Antichrists and its system and the Book of Revelation and all these different things, there's still so much joy and there's still so much achievement and accomplishment actively currently happening as they, them, and those are deconstructing the patriarchy, deconstructing man and womanhood and doing the Age of Aquarius and androgyny and egalitarianism and complementarianism and, you know, Kool-Aid punch, diluted fourth wave feminism and all these different things. But life goes on and we are commanded to be fruitful and multiply. And now as our sons mature, they're looking for spouses and we're watching this progression take place. And there's so much fulfillment and joy in that. And Satan can't steal that regardless of everything else that's going on. So this is where our other perspective comes in, where you actively participate and do and control what you can control. And in a very real way, you know, Nelson Nash talks about it. He talks about noise canceling headphones, right? And so you got to put on the noise canceling headphones and you just have to put the noise cancellation button on. And really with a lot of this stuff with the social media and the social engineering and the Twitterverse and, you know, elections and the Republicans and the Democrats, that beat will go on until the kingdom and New Jerusalem and everything gets squared away. But until then, we're going to occupy, right? And we're going to actively wait. We're going to serve. And there's still going to be victories there. And there's still going to be, I mean, it's so fascinating how the Lord provides. And, you know, even financially, when you're looking at like, well, what do we do? What do we do with our money and our investment and all these different things? And then the Lord just opens a door and you're like, wow, that's what I wanted to do. And I was wondering how we were going to do that. And then the Lord opens a door and it's like incredible. And you're like, you know, how does this even exist? And the Lord just provides, you know, and I'm sure it's going to be the same for our children's spouses and all that stuff. That's the way the Lord does things, is if you are consistent and persistent and you know what you want and you stick to it, hell or high water, like regardless of whatever's going on, regardless of what other people think, regardless of circumstances, regardless of whatever you perceive may or may not be happening, you stay the course, you stick to it, you keep your head down, and you work hard every day. And when the time is right, the door opens.
Right.
And
you pray for it. I mean, it is all a working in mercy of God. And
it's all an answer to prayer. I mean, if you're not praying for it, it's not going to happen because you're not even going to be looking for it anyway.
Right. But just praying for it. I mean, we've been praying for our children since they've been born, before they were born, and praying for the Lord's will for their life and diligently praying. And, you know, I have a little prayer journal and I just write out my prayers to the Lord almost every single day. Sometimes life happens and I skip a day or two, but then I get back and I try to go back and rewrite those days out and just pray and just put my petition before the Lord and trust him and just praise him and trust him for who he is, and in faith believe that he's going to provide for our children beyond us. You know, we won't be here forever, but beyond us, that they will be provided for and all of their needs, not only spouses for them, if that's what the Lord wills for them, but also all of their needs just provided for, and just to give them wisdom and direction as they continue to live on in this wicked world. Long after we're gone, they're going to need the Lord's hand in all of that.
Yeah. And what's really important, I think, about that, if I use myself for an example, and not to go on like a rabbit trail or a tangent, but I can remember being in my 20s and us being newlyweds and then our first child. And I remember, you know, and from that current eschatological position And with the current events and all that stuff, I mean, I would never have dreamed that 2023 would have came and went, mm-hmm. you know, and this is really where your goals and your plan come into play. Because if I had taken that younger version of me and the thought process and everything, and how like that has completely been rebuilt and with totally different values and totally different perspectives and totally different goals and desires and all these different things. And if we would have drug our feet, if we would have waited, if we would have hesitated, you know, it's similar to investing. Like, well, I want to invest at the bottom, and when's the shoe going to drop, and when's the bottom going to fall out? And what I've learned is you develop your fundamentals and you act on that regardless of market conditions. Because if you're waiting for these constructed bubbles to pop, mm-hmm. nobody's ever been able to time that right. And you could be that much, you know, it's exactly like the bunker mentality. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I'm going to build a bunker. Mm-hmm. And when the poop hits the prop, you know, we're going in the bunker and locking it up. And we always tell the story of our prepper single guy in West Texas. And when the Ebola outbreak took place during Obama, and he was like, y'all need to move out here and we need to lock the gate and go DEFCON 5. And just to imagine how our life would have been sad and pathetic, and we would have missed out on all the joys mm-hmm. and all the, you know, like, for example, you know, the Lord has blessed us and we work hard and we want to enjoy vacation as a family. And that's why we've chosen a cruise, because mom gets a real break and she doesn't have to cook and clean and wash dishes and all these different things. And it's not cheap, you know, relatively speaking, it's incredibly cheap comparatively to like traveling and Airbnb and eating out. It's like a third.
Yeah.
It's a third of all that cost. So yeah. In a very real way, it's very cheap, but you know, we do that. Now there's a lot of people that look at market conditions and all these different things and like, well, you're an idiot for doing that because, you know, you could be building more infrastructure with that. And you mm-hmm. think that everything is so cool that you can just go on vacation and all that stuff. And
no, we don't think everything's so cool.
No, but at the same time, you know, and this, when I say you have to enjoy life, like you can wait for the shoe to drop, you can wait for the dirty nuke, and you can prepare. And if you're not enjoying life during the, I think the perfect example is in whatever year that was, in when that Ebola thing happened, that had to be
14.
Was that?
I think it was 14.
Well, we moved in 14. Was it that same year?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. I mean, yeah. 14. I mean, that's 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. And what if we would have made that decision and done that? And we would have basically missed out on all of everything that we have. We wouldn't have the ranch. We wouldn't have the cows. We wouldn't have the property next door. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the sky was falling and this existential threat. Mm-hmm. Is this sounding familiar to anybody? Mm-hmm. Like, and now full blown communism. And, you know, and there's only one true orange messiah that can save us all. And if you don't do your civil duty and vote, don't complain. All these different things, right? And it's the same story over and over again. And you have to act. You have to actively write your living legacy. And if you are waiting for the perfect moment, if you're waiting for the perfect opportunity, if you're waiting for the perfect person, if you're waiting for the perfect church, it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be living in a shed mm-hmm. in the woods, and your family is going to be ostracized, and your family is going to be very confused, and your children are going to be confused. Mm-hmm. And it's going to suck. And you've created that with your own hands. You've built that and you've acted with a scarcity mentality and you haven't acted. And look, this isn't a prosperity gospel thing. You know, this isn't some kind of prosperity gospel thing, but God, you know, the other day when we had, when I had David Knight on, you know, God has always provided for his remnant. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean you act opulent or stupid. It doesn't mean you're wasteful. But if you act with integrity and you apply real fiscal principles and hard work and dedication and commitment, and you are consistent and you are faithful to God, he will honor you. And you, and we certainly are not perfect, and we deserve hell. Like, we deserve absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. We deserve hell. And if we got what we deserved, we would all get cast into hell. But God is faithful, God is good, and God rewards faithful children. And if you're not faithful and you are his, I just had a conversation with a father of four, a beautiful family. And if you're not, if you're his and you're not faithful, he's going to whoop you into where you need to be. And if he's not doing that, you're not his. Okay. And that's just the reality of the matter. And I'm thankful that I can have those conversations with people. It's heartbreaking. It's devastating. And it's sad to watch someone who could be very successful and has a beautiful family and could build a living legacy, kind of self-destruct and self-mutilate and just worship themselves.
But it's the culture. The culture,
it is totally the culture.
The culture is so strong. And it's just sad where we are, I think, as, I wouldn't just say Americans, but any first world country, just the love of self, the self idol worship, the, you know, the flesh, the, all of it. It's just, it's so strong that it will suck you in and it will destroy you. I mean, and even like you said, if you are a diligent person, but you just get sucked in by the fear, that's always bombarded, like just the news and the social media. And it's just fear, 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 and don't enjoy a minute or a day because everything is just this perpetual fear of politics, fear of world events, fear of famine, you know, fear of whatever it is, you know, just keep stuffing your pantry and preparing
in the water.
Yeah. Preparing for the worst case scenario. But I mean, if you're living in that, you're not living, you know, right. You're surviving, but you're not living life and enjoying it. And there's definitely a balance. You know, it says the wise man perceives the evil and
he hides himself.
Yeah. So, I mean, we should be,
wise.
We should be looking around, observing, yeah. But if you're always observing and you're always in panic survival mode, it's not a good, healthy place to be.
And if you always, I've met a lot of men that had a very strong worth ethic, but they had such a small mentality and they had such a scarcity mentality when it comes to, well, all I've done is make widgets. And so that's all I can do. And I don't know anything else. And I don't know any different. And I can't change. I mean, that is so scary. And, you know, I can only make $30,000 a year. And how am I supposed to provide for my wife so that she can stay home? And how am I supposed to provide for all these children that God has blessed us with? I mean, obviously, God's asleep. I mean, he's not really aware of what's going on. And, you know, somebody needs to tell him or need to wake him up. But, you know, the reality of that is, no, you need to change. You need to develop skills. You need to work harder on yourself, develop your skills so that you can expand and grow. I mean, that's what's fascinating and amazing. And we do live in a communist Marxist country, and we have two regimes. We have the Marxists on the left and we have the fascists on the right, and the Constitution got burned up at the Civil War. but there are still vestiges of freedom, and God still provides for his people. And there is still so much opportunity, and how that has been squandered and wasted is to whom much is given, to whom much is given, much shall be required. And I think about that, and, you know, and then you just think about, you know, the Bible and the fact that we have a canonized Bible with 66 books in black and white that we can access, that we have multiple copies of, that we can read and memorize. Mm-hmm. And we have access to that. And to whom much is given, much shall be required. There are billions of people that don't have that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I could go on a rant, but I'm not going to do that. We could probably wrap it up in closing. Regarding writing this living legacy, mm-hmm. and, you know, fleshing that out and try failing and adjusting, did you have anything in addition that you wanted to talk about regarding that?
I mean, I would just say it's going to require all of you to do that. You know, it is a self-sacrificing thing to raise that next generation and pour into them, build those relationships daily, you know, even for years and years, if it feels like maybe your relationship with one of your children or maybe your relationship with your spouse is not improving. It's going to take years of dedication and just resilience to just keep trusting the Lord and just keep self-sacrificing in those relationships to build them. And, you know, it doesn't mean that all of our children will end up even staying here on the land, or it's no promise like, oh, our goal is that they would all stay here. No, the goal is that the Lord will provide for them and the Lord will reveal his will to them. And that might mean they end up in Alaska or they end up in the Philippines, or we don't know where our children are going to end up at. We want to provide everything that we can for them so that they can start well or end well, however they choose to use their inheritance, their land that, you know, we've given them. But it's not, if the Lord directs your paths, we don't direct the paths either. So we can be faithful in our daily walk, and we can help disciple them, and we can redirect them to the Lord and just to seek the Lord in what he has for them.
Yeah. And that's the great point of that is because we get asked that all the time. Oh, well, you know, what does that look like? And what if all your children don't want to stay on the property? And then how will their part be divvied up? And I can say this, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how that's all going to work. I don't know how that's all going to work out. I don't know how that's going to flesh out. I don't know what that's going to look like. And there may or may not be any books written on that or whatever, you know. And this is kind of my point as far as like this living legacy, and there isn't really a book written on it. I don't know what that looks like. And we're going to cross that bridge when we get to it. Mm-hmm.
And, well, I mean, like I said, some might start here, some might end here. We don't really know what that's going to be like.
Yeah. And it might be a bridge that we never cross. You know, people ask all the time, well, how do you get your children to buy in? I don't know. We've always lived self-sacrificially. I do not have any kind of hobbies. I don't have any kind of sports balls, or I don't drown worms. I don't have anything that I like to do.
We also don't overwork them and make living here torture either. Yeah. I think that's a big part of it. Some people on, you know, if you're on a farm or you're on raw land and it's just work, work, work constantly, and then the kids are like, man, I've been shucking purple hull peas all summer long. I am getting out of here mm-hmm. when I'm 18. Yeah. I am done. Like, I am not, you know, I don't want to stay here one more minute.
And that's because we treat them in a larger way. We treat them as equals. Like, we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. When God gave you to us, he didn't give us slave labor.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And when we make decisions, we, especially as they mature, we can sit down and talk about it and decide about it collectively as a family. And that's why God gave the family a patriarch. So if you need anybody to split a tie, you know, the burden of leadership falls to the patriarch to split the tie. And while that isn't always great and groovy, that's the burden of leadership. And I accept the mantle and bear the weight of that. And we march forward and stuff gets done. And God blesses it. And God blesses the order. And it's a beautiful thing. And it's incredibly encouraging and it's very exciting. And regardless of the apocalyptic deconstruction of the Western world, you know, we march forward and create our little slice of paradise, and God blesses, and you know, and crazy people get bucked off horses and blow up arms and bones, and nothing is perfect, you know, and it all isn't puppy dogs and rainbows and gummy bears. No. But we move forward and we advance, and we see the hand of the Lord and his work and his moving in our lives, and we praise him for it. And it is incredible and it's exciting, and that's really all I wanted to talk about today. And God is good and faithful to us, and we deserve nothing, and he deserves all the praise. And with that, y'all, you need to remember, stay fearless, my friends.